There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad to have you here. Lots to talk about today. Mobile City Council issues. You had the hubbub with the city, talking about the state of the city and all that. We'll get into some of that coming up in hour number two of the show. Also, the latest on a bridge discussion. I mean, we just probably should start dedicating an hour of the show a day to just bridge chat. Okay, maybe we'll do that. Maybe it'll just be like the second hour of the show every day will be all bridge. We'll take a look at some bridge issues and maybe some, I don't know if you can call them new pieces of news, but we'll reiterate some pieces of news on that coming up. Also, let's do this. Let's go right to Montgomery and check in with my buddy Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, as it's quick pick time in the legislature. It's a lotto day, right?
That's right, but I don't know. I kind of like the idea of bridge talk. This is a card game talk, right?
That's right. We're talking about Mom's bridge game instead of the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project that, you know, we're just waiting for that. There's a whole special session coming to fund the bridge, isn't there? No? No?
I wouldn't count on that quite yet, but you never know.
Yeah, well, I do know. It's not happening. I want to talk about a whole bunch of stuff going on in Montgomery with you, but first, let's get into if people got their email this morning from you, and we'll tell folks how to get that email in their inbox each morning in just a little bit. They'd see your number three item up here, Lottery Day in the House. Kind of explain to us where we are with the lotto bill and why today's the House's day to talk lotto.
That's right, Sean. Today is going to the lottery bill is going to be debated in the House, and let's kind of remind people where this started. Mm-hmm. A lottery bill was proposed. You had kind of competing versions, but the one that got passed out of the Senate was a paper-only lottery. This is about as basic as it gets. This is you going to the gas station and buying your scratch off or your lotto ticket, and that passed the Senate with 21 votes. That was the minimum number of votes needed to get it through the chamber. So it then went to the House. Before it got to the floor, in committee, they changed the way the lottery revenue is allocated. In the original version in the Senate, the revenue went to, number one, pay off the oil and gas trust fund. You know, this is the fund that all that oil and gas royalty money goes into, and the state borrows from it a lot, and they have over the years. So the first money would go to pay back that debt so that we have our rainy day fund. And then everything after that would go to the general fund. That pays for prisons, Medicaid, state troopers, all the non-education expenses. That's how it passed the Senate. Well, in the House and in the committee, they added an amendment saying, no, we're going to allow that. We'll allow 75% to go to the general fund for those non-education expenses. But we want 25% to go to education. So that's where it stands right now, is that 25% of the revenue goes to education. So today they're going to take it up and they're going to debate it. Sean, I was honest in my assessment today in the Daily News. I just don't think they have the votes to pass it. I think there are a number of factors that don't set up very well in its favor, including the price tag. You're only going to generate about $167 million out of this every year. That's really about half what you might expect from a lottery from other states. That's not a ton of money when it comes down to it, relatively speaking. Not all the Republicans are on board. Some of them still have moral and economic objections. Not all the Democrats are on board because they didn't get their protections for the dog track casinos. So I just don't see how you get to the 63 votes necessary to pass this.
Yeah, I want to get into that too, what that means for the Senate, what changes you think may peel out the votes if it did make it to go back to the Senate. But let's talk about on the House side. If I'm looking at this before session starts, and you'd say, hey, Sean, there's going to be they're going to be moving a bill for lottery and they're going to move a bill for gas tax. And you say, which one do you think will pass? You know, if only one of these will pass, I would tell you the lotto bill. I talk to the folks every day on the phone. I get the emails. I get the text. The people seem to be amenable to the idea of lottery. They seem to be quite contrary, a lot of folks, to the idea of the gas tax. But the gas tax passed, and the lotto is hanging by a thread of a thread.
That's right. That's right. It's interesting you put it like that. You know, the lottery's free money. You know, of course, it's voluntary. It's you know, people will see it as voluntary. It's free money. Why wouldn't you want to do it? And it's popular generally in the legislature. People say, well, I don't mind a lottery. I like a lottery, but not this lottery. I think that's pretty common, is that if you just polled the Alabama legislature, it would be about the same percentage for and against of the population, a lot more for it, maybe 60-70%. But you get down into the details, and that's where it starts breaking down. You get down into some of these arguments between the existing gambling operators. This bill, if there was no disagreement between the Victory Land and Green Track, some of these old dog track casinos, if they didn't exist or they were just protected under the law already, this would already have passed. It would have passed probably years ago. But because every time there's a gambling bill, these casinos come back and say, no, we want legal protection, or we're gonna kill the bill. That's what happens every year.
Okay, so it looks like it's more about who gets what money than the actual thing. The lotto is not the issue. It's the revenue split, even though as anemic as you said, you know, and I think you're probably a lot closer to accurate with your number here, the 167 million versus the, we've heard 350, we've heard 250, but that the issue is not the lotto. The issue is who's getting money, right? Who's getting paid?
Yeah, well, again, I think everybody's for, or a lot of people are for, just the, if you just had a lottery, no big deal. I think it would pass. But gambling in Alabama is a pretty complicated issue, and anytime you open that question up, you've got, you know, the old school dog track casinos that have their machines and they want to be protected. I would say that's the biggest factor here. The revenue split, that is a factor, but at the end of the day, I don't see it as a deal breaker for that many people. I mean, the fact that it passed the Senate without a dime going to education shows you that, you know, they were at least open to the idea of using that revenue for non-education expenses. So I don't see the revenue as that big a deal. Another factor in this is, it's interesting, we talked about it a little bit in the Daily News, is that $167 million revenue, the estimated revenue. Yes, it is low. It would be a lot bigger if they added to that bill, if they added to the bill, hey, you can have these instant electronic lottery games like they have in Georgia, these Keno type games where it's essentially a slot machine. And the reason they haven't added that to the bill is because technically that might be going against Alabama's prohibition on slot machines.
Well, okay, and then there's this idea that, okay, you do that opens up to all these digital gaming forms, but at the same time, on tribal lands, people are saying, well, you know, if we do this, then that'll let the Porch Creeks have full Class 3 gaming. Then I hear other people, Todd, in my ear say, they could already do that. That they can already do that now. I have no real way to vet that as being true or false. Do you?
Well, yes, I do. As far as the legislature goes, as far as the legal advisors that advise the legislature, that is absolutely true. We have paramutual gambling. We have dog tracks. That is legal. That is Class 3 gambling. You know.
So the tribal lands could be rolling dice and playing cards and doing all that.
Well, not necessarily. That's not exactly how it works. But when they pursued that compact, if they pursued, which they've talked about a compact for a long time. Class three could be in there, but I say this, a lot of casinos, I mean, just knowing the business a little bit, it's the machines that make the money. You know, there's low overhead when it comes to slot machines, as opposed to, you know, a skill table like a blackjack or poker or roulette. I mean, you've got that skilled labor versus,
a machine.
Right, a machine that just makes the cash for you. So, but I can't speak for them. Maybe they would. I just don't think that's... the class three argument, a lot of the casinos, the non-Indian dog track casinos are claiming, hey, they want this bill so they can get class three gambling. I don't think that's true at all. I think at the end of the day, the Porch Creek say, you know, if we're going to have a lottery, this is a good lottery because it doesn't help their competition like the other bills did.
Okay, now on to... If the House could come together on this and it gets signed off on, do you know the level of tolerable change for the Senate? Like you said, the Senate voted it on this very narrow margin. Do you know like what the deal breakers are for those yes votes out of the Senate? Do you have any idea?
Well, I do know that the bill sponsor, Senator Greg Allbritton, right there in Atmore. He said, look, I can't pass it with a 25-75 split. You know, I can't pass it unless it goes back to where it was. So I don't know where exactly those votes break down. You'd think maybe you might pick up maybe a vote or two if you had the education piece, but according to the bill sponsor, and he's counting the votes, he says no. So you got to at least trust that. But here's another thing, though, Sean. If it does pass the House, I mean, if they do something special and Steve Klaus has some magic and they pass it through the House, it doesn't pass the Senate that way, they can still go to conference. That's always an option. And interesting things happen in conference committee. That's what happens when the Senate passes one bill, House passes another bill, and they don't match up. They then have a combo committee of like three or four members from each body that hammer out the differences, and depending on that, that's what you want to watch for if the House passes the bill, because what agreement they come up with, then it's a quick vote in the House and Senate and onto the ballot if it passes. But again, I'm not sold on this thing passing the House today.
Really? Like, this is so weird to me, because I thought, you know, going in, this was going to be the low-hanging fruit. In fact, it ends up being the opposite of this. This is going to be one of the more contentious things.
Yeah, and just because it's so complicated and there are lots of different factors. Look, you're always going to have folks that are against gambling, right? You're always going to have some conservative folks and some Republicans and Democrats who say, you know, they have moral objections to expanded gambling. A lot of them have economic objections on, you know, sort of a regressive tax. So that's always going to exist. So you need a coalition of both to get anything like this passed. But because all the Democrats are mad about not getting those protections for casinos in there, it's kind of a non-starter. I just don't see how you find 63 Republican votes.
And there's no way to meet in the middle on this, because if you change it, you know, to benefit those dog track places to get the Democrat votes, you'll lose the Republican votes.
I think so. I definitely think that if they succeeded, well, first of all, you got to succeed in getting an amendment, which is that's a tough task,
right?
But if you succeed in getting an amendment that said, okay, we're going to protect these dog tracks and we're going to bring them into the gambling bill, well, okay, you've won, you know, maybe 10, 12 Democrat votes, but you've lost maybe as many or more on the Republican side. So yeah, that math just... The only way I could see that happening is if there was some kind of promise, you know, some kind of, hey, we will get that done too. We will pass that bill too. You have my word, but that's a risky proposition for some.
All right, coming right back, more with Todd Stacey with Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. When we come back, he'll tell you exactly how to get that email in your inbox each morning. And in the 9 days or 8 days left of session, you got to be reading every one of these for sure. All right, coming right back after the news.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:24, FM Talk 106.5, and continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Todd, people want to get that email in their inbox. Tell them how to do it.
Oh, yeah, it's real easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. And right at the top, you see subscribe. Click that button. Enter your name and your email. It's free, no cost at all, but you'll be on the list. And we send out a daily email every morning saying, you know, doing our rundown of the day's news, whether it's from here in Montgomery with the legislative session going on, but also Congress, they're getting revved back up. So, yeah, we'd be glad to have you as a subscriber.
All right, let's talk about some national news in Alabama and a stop by Bernie Sanders here in the state.
Yeah, well, you know, Alabama is such a Republican state that you forget that, hey, they have a Democratic primary, too, and the Democratic candidates are going to want those votes in what is a very, very crowded primary right now. So, yeah, Bernie Sanders did a swing through Alabama. He stopped in Birmingham. He stopped in Montgomery and also went to Lowndes County, which has gotten a lot of attention lately for some of their problems. So he spent a significant amount of time here, and he's actively courting the African-American vote. He's actively courting black voters. That's who when he got in, Bernie Sanders was the front runner. It was kind of amazing. And yet, when Biden announced, when former Vice President Joe Biden announced a few weeks ago, he just completely got eclipsed by Joe Biden. And one area in particular where Biden just completely cut into Bernie Sanders was with the black vote. I mean, just pretty extraordinary numbers. 38% to 13% amongst black or non-white voters in the Democratic primary. So he's clearly got a problem. Bernie is selling his brand of, you know, Democratic socialism. He wants Medicare for all. He wants free college. I mean, you know the issues.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got to sell that to black voters. That's such an important contingent in that Democratic primary. But what interests me about it is that you're going to see more of these candidates coming through. They're wanting Alabama Democratic voters, and that kind of gives us a peek into the national platform.
Now, back here at home, a national story also resonating in Alabama. That is, of course, what we talked about last week with Alabama's abortion law passing and the threats that something bad's going to happen to Alabama from outside Alabama because of this law. Governor Ivey seems nonplussed by the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, there was a lot of emotion, right? I mean, this is a passionate issue, mm-hmm. whether you're pro-life or pro-choice. I mean, you tend to have a lot of passion. Activists tend to have a lot of passion on that issue. So I wasn't surprised to see a lot of threats. You know, you see these celebrities on Twitter and mm-hmm. people like that. You know, movie companies say, oh, we'll never film there. You know, were they going to anyway? You know, and you saw that with Georgia. You've seen it with Ohio and other states. So I really wasn't surprised by all that. I do think Governor Ivey has a long-term view of it that, hey, this too shall pass. There'll be something else that'll grab everybody's attention. And there's always something to get angry about on Twitter. So, you know, there's no shortage of issues. Look, I don't think the issue is completely without merit. I do think there are plenty of folks that object not just to restrictions on abortion, but to the no exceptions for rape and incest. I think the fact that ours goes further than anybody else's does help us kind of stand out. And if you're going to punish somebody, we're just kind of asking for it. But at the same time, you can't base your law off of what Hollywood says or what, you know, the Twitterati, as it were, says. So yeah, I don't expect Kay Ivey, who's pretty tough, I don't expect her to be swayed by activists on this issue.
Yeah, I mean, I just think you mentioned the movie thing and mentioned what happened in Georgia. Alabama doesn't, I mean, we do have movies being produced here, but I'm thinking, you know, if somebody would threaten Toyota, Mazda, or Mercedes, or Airbus, or something like that, I don't know if it moves the needle with them as much.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, they're looking for, you know, a solid workforce. They're looking for a cheap place to invest mm-hmm. as far as land, taxes, and that workforce. So, I mean, those are the number one factors. But these things can have a factor. Cultural issues can certainly have a factor. We learned something the other day when they were debating this bill, and I actually want to get to the bottom of this when we have more time. But Senator Bobby Singleton said that when Google was considering North Alabama for their, they've got a data center that's being built up there, it was a couple of years ago during the Confederate flag flap, and that they strongly encouraged Governor Bentley at the time to, you know, take those flags down off of the north side of the Capitol because they'd feel a lot more comfortable locating in Alabama. Now, we'll see if that was true or not. I'd really love to get to the bottom of it, but I don't think he made it up. And that does sound like something a company like that would do. So these issues matter. The question is how much and how long do they last in people's attention. These days, Sean, people have pretty short attention spans.
Hey, let's go ride our bikes. That's our buddy, Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Man, I appreciate it. Get up there and check out what's happening in the State House and keep us up to date.
Will do, Sean. Y'all be good.
Will do as well. That's Todd Stacy. Check him out, aldailynews.com. Got some text waiting. We'll grab some calls as well when we get back at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:36, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. We'll check in with you and answer a couple questions here from the text line as well. Same phone number, same text line, 343-0106. Heading for a high today, right around 90 again. I think we're at 86 at our studios. Man, it feels it's hot. Dr. Bill says maybe by the weekend, 90s will be the rule across the Gulf Coast. Yep, and it'll only be that way till like October. It's all starting again. All right, a couple things here on direct questions from the text line, then we'll get opinions from the text line. Questions on specific bills, and I know, Dalton, you had interest in this one as well, the fantasy sports gaming bill. Representative Kyle South's bill is still in committee, but things look good for that. I'm sorry, Senator Kyle South's bill looks good. It's in committee. Comes out of committee. They think the votes are there. That's the Duel of Kings, FanDuel, right? FanDuel, and then something Kings. Fantasy sports, those things. That has been brought up 2 years in a row. What is it? Draft. It's DraftKings. So FanDuel, DraftKings, not FanKings, DraftDuel. That would be better, though, DraftDuel. Those kind of, what they say aren't games of chance, they're games of skill because you select your teams there. I mean, it's one of those things that's been debated a couple times. That may make it through. Be interesting. That makes it through. Lotto doesn't. What is more, you look at the levels of gambling. You could say that it's all gambling, it's all risking money, but it's different, right? We do that. Bingo's one thing. Rolling dice is something else. Right, there's class three gaming for a reason, right? Categories of gambling, but the fantasy sports thing looks like has a pretty good chance of making it through. All right, this one here, what was it? And now it's moved on out of my scroll there. Okay, the bill that would allow municipal police and fire departments to back out of the jurisdiction areas. So yeah, like the PJ, the FJ, I guess. That bill is still in committee. Now, I can't tell you what chance it has going forward because it's still in committee. It looks like it will. Now, right now, they're all focused on Lotto in the House and a handful of other things in the Senate. But the, I'm sorry, this is just kind of coming in as I'm getting information out of Montgomery. And it is still in committee. And they really haven't scored. Okay, they are calling. There we go. The police jurisdiction bill is in committee, in the municipal government committee, and it will be voted on next week in committee. So it's not even out of the committee yet. See if it makes it out there. That's one that's, of course, important to places all over the state. But here locally, of course, it's a big deal with the discussion of the city of Mobile and areas of Mobile County to the west and, you know, whether they would continue as the way things have gone, the city's talked about pulling back from, and already has to some degree, from the jurisdiction. What would this mean if you go, you know, police is one thing, and what about fire? Because there is, you know, we've talked about this many times, there is a mechanism. Now, we've heard from Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, who has said, hey, it would take, I think, 80 additional deputies to patrol the area right now that is being done by MPD within the police jurisdiction. But there's a mechanism, right? There's a mechanism for Sheriff's Department to step in. But there's not fire. There's not fire. It's volunteer fire departments. So what do you do about the fire coverage in areas outside the city limit? All right. Okay, we'll get to that one in a second. I'll get to the phone lines in just a second. I want to read one more text here. This texter says, you wonder why people think politicians are all crooked. They have no problem with forcing a gas tax on us, but they don't like the lottery. That's voluntary. We make our own decisions. People will still cross state lines and play. The people of Alabama lose again. These politicians need to stop putting their morals on the people and let them vote when we can decide whether or not we want the lottery. Yeah, but, you know, it's not even, there is to this texter here, There is a morality component. I know what you're saying, that there are some people opposing it for moral reasons. But I think the bigger opposition to this is everybody can't figure out how to get paid. Meaning, not specifically politicians getting paid, but people that are in their ear, right? So you can't get support from one group because a couple different questions. It's the 100% general fund money versus the 75-25 split with 75 general fund, 25 ETF, that splits some people. Then it's even before that, the split between whether it's going to be paper lottery or it's going to be digital lottery, which then is a, which is good for the dog tracks in the state, parimutuel betting facilities. So you have their support. I mean, one group would say, okay, well, we'll vote for this lottery if you can have a digital version that benefits these dog tracks, you know, that are around the state, these parimutuel betting facilities. Okay, well, that would then have those people vote yes. But in doing that, you would lose vote of the people that want to make it what they call the clean lotto bill. Those people would be out. See what I'm saying? It's this game, like, if you gather these votes over here, and get them to say yes, you've, by design on some of these issues, there's not even a negotiation point. You push these others out. Okay, so let's go get these people back in. Let's whip these votes. Let's get them back in. Well, in doing that, what they want is going to be exclusionary to the people you just had. So you lose them. Now you're back over there. And so that's what's happening. It's not even there is a component, and it would, and Todd said it, and I agree with him. There is a component, although I think it is the smallest it's ever been in this discussion, that opposed the lottery at all levels for public health or morality issues. I think that's very small. They do exist. I think the majority of what you're seeing in Montgomery is people can't figure out how to get everybody paid. And once again, I don't picture them handing over sacks of money. I know you all think that's what happens all day long, but it's more the people that they represent or that are in their ear getting their version of this going through. All right. Let's see. Talking about horse racing. Listen, I still am generally confused on how the parimutuel betting, the idea, I guess, the way I understand it, somebody can correct me here, the parimutuel betting is you're not betting against odds, you're betting against other people. I guess that's what, the mutual portion of it, that you're betting against other people. I really don't understand that, but it's because this person's asking about horse racing. Well, those horse races are on, and you can go to the dog tracks, air quotes here, and bet on the horse races there. It is just, and it's been this way for decades in the state, and it's frustrated me for the same period of time where you have carve-outs. Well, we don't gamble in the state, except if you want to go play video bingo or you want to go to parimutuel betting. Either we should, I know there's no hope of this, I have a couple ideas. Number one, I believe the state should vote to legalize lotteries, plural. In other words, let private entities risk capital, put on lotteries, and the state takes a fee up front to have a license to run the lottery and takes a percentage of revenues. There's no risk in the state. For the state, the state then doesn't open a big lottery office, doesn't have a bureau of lottery, doesn't grow government into places it shouldn't be. It just says the people of this state and people who want to risk capital can do this. And you know, you have them bonded out that they can pay off the lotto wins and all those things. And then have the state make the revenue without any of the risk. And keep the state out of something it shouldn't be in the business of in the first place. Same way I feel about the booze business. I mean, these are not jobs. Our founders did not believe these were the jobs of government. Okay, so those two. But then beyond that, if we're going to do it, why this kind of... Well, we get this kind of gambling, this is different than the other kind of gambling. Come on. Either you do the gambling or you don't, but we can't do that here. And we can't even, in what is the wine spritzer of the gambling world, lottery, get an agreement in Montgomery on that. And once again, remember, this is a two-part deal. The first would be a constitutional amendment. You would vote, like, if this made it through somehow, which it looks like it's on very thin ice right now, but if it made it through, we would be voting first for a constitutional amendment to legalize, to be able to have a lottery in the state, to be able to do that, because it's against the Constitution as of right now. But if that was amended with a constitutional amendment, then you could do that. The second bill would be, okay, now that we can do lottery, what does it look like? What do we call it? How do you split the money? You have the Bureau of Lottery. You have the, here's how all the stuff works. Is it going to be in retail stores? Is it going to be only in these kind of stores? All those things. That would be the second bill. The first hurdle would be the hurdle of just, can you do it in the first place? But it'd only be specific to lottery. Or some people say it would be open to more things. Again, they can't figure it out in Montgomery. What are we the people supposed to do? 1247, be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:52, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Which, by the way, I appreciate all the nomination votes for this show in the nappies. Right now it's down to the actual voting for who wins. For the favorite talk show. Listen, four other categories as well for FM Talk 106.5. Very proud of that. If you go to votenappies.com, we sure appreciate your vote. Y'all were great with the nominations. Please help us win these categories. Here in the media section, go to votenappies.com and click media. You'll see the choices for FM Talk 106.5 listed in there. And I appreciate your help. We got everything from, of course, Sports Night with Dalton and Corey, to Sip and Chew, to the morning show, to this very show, Midday Mobile. All right, so votenappies.com, that's the link. I haven't really put anything directly out on my Twitter feed. I guess I'll do that today. Need your help, so get your votes in. And also somebody else up for Nappy as favorite Lanyap writer, that's Jeff Poor, and he's going to be joining us right after the top of the hour news. To set that up, I want to play a clip from this morning's 8 o'clock hour of Mobile Mornings when Quinn Hillier joined us and talked about the Voices section, Voices of Alabama Women inside Reckon, which is part of AL.com, and the discussion of the abortion law here in Alabama. Let's go to that clip. We're going to play the clip. We'll come back, and then Jeff joins us after the top of the hour. So this is from about 8:05 this morning. Mobile Mornings, continue our conversation with Quinn Hillier. And this is part of what's going to come up on the Midday Show today, as well as we're looking into AL.com's Reckon series, their Reckon, which is their, I guess, op-ed platform. I don't know. Quinn, how do you Reckon over at AL.com? What do you qualify that as? What is that part of AL.com?
Just like they've tried to redefine everything else. I mean, they don't call editors anymore. They're content coordinators or something like that. It's just brand new terminology, probably thought up by some PR firm that has never dealt with news before. I don't know what Reckon means.
They say it's a in-depth look at issues facing Alabama.
That's right. So it's their op-ed section.
At an in-depth look, in this case, at issues facing Alabama. They have over 200 women responding to the new anti-abortion law. And, I mean, I didn't do a hard count. I did a skim, and I counted pretty quickly. I didn't go back and make absolutely sure of each one. But I got, of over 200 women, only about 25 who were pro-life. So they were running nearly more than 7-1 pro-choice, to use the terms usually used. So even though every poll shows that in Alabama, a strong plurality and maybe even a majority of women are pro-life, AL.com has it 7 or 8-1 pro-choice. That's not representative of the public. That is skewing the presentation for East Coast elitist opinion, you know, run by the new houses out of New York and New Jersey or whatever they're from.
Quinn, how do you know that 85% of Alabama women aren't pro-choice?
Well, I mean, look, people bust the polls, but people that bust the polls don't understand how polling works. And there is a margin for error in polls. But the margin for error with a reputable poll is only so big. And every single poll for years and years has shown that a plurality and sometimes a majority of Alabama women are pro-life. So when you have poll after poll showing that, and of course what it really is a third, and a third, but it's slightly more than a third that are totally pro-life. It's another more than a third that is, you know, that is mostly pro-life, but with a few exceptions, and then there's slightly less than a third that's totally pro-choice. But when poll after poll shows that, and then you have something like 85-90% of the people in the AL.com thing who are pro-choice, that tells you that's not a representative sample.
This is one of those angles where I ask the question, is it omission or commission? In other words, what I'm asking Quinn here is it because they sat down at Reckon and decided that we're going to skew this thing differently than what the actual demo of the state is on this issue? Or is it that the people that they would know to go find to ask the inside their universe of people seem to lean very heavily pro-choice?
Well, it's not that they hand-selected the people. I think it was sort of like a public call for comment, but it was but you can craft your public call so that a disproportionate percentage of your kind of people hear the call. It's how you publicize the call. And if you have no safeguards on the back end, then you get a skewed result. But look, this is common with the establishment media. Just a couple of days ago, National Public Radio put out for their news people a guidance reminder on abortion procedures, terminology, and rights. And the entire thing is basically saying, we're going to call every single word having to do with abortion, we're going to choose the terminology that is most conducive to the pro-choice point of view. So, quote, as we've covered the new abortion laws in Georgia and the legislation in Alabama, we need to remember this. For instance, one thing to keep in mind about this law and others like it, proponents refer to it as a fetal heartbeat law. That is their term. It is not ours. So, I mean, what else are you going to call it? If it's a bill about determining when the fetus or the baby or whatever you want to call it has a heartbeat, what else are you going to call it but a fetal heartbeat bill?
Right.
But no, that's not good enough for NPR because that reminds people that there's a beating heart. So we don't call it that. And it goes on and on and on. The partial birth abortion is never to be referred to as partial birth abortion. It's always to be referred to as intact dilation and extraction.
Really?
Yes. Or, quote, a procedure known medically as intact dilation and extraction. Opponents call it partial birth abortion, they say. But, of course, those opponents are all idiots now. You know, this is my summation of what of what their tone is. The opponents are all idiots, so we're not going to go with the opponents. We're going to call it intact dilation and extraction. And it goes on and on like that. There is such a heavy media bias in favor of abortion, and it shows up again and again and again. And look, I can say this as even, you know.
All right, so you get an idea of what we're talking about this morning, right? So Jeff Poor, who's been part of this discussion over on Twitter, is going to join us to talk about it next, right here on Midday Mobile.